This is Brittany Blackwell, host of the Resilient Teacher Podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, along with this podcast. Each show on the network is independently owned, and the views expressed may not represent those of other podcasts. For the best education podcasts, visit edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back. Steve here, and today I'm talking with Dr. Aditya Nagraf. He is the creator and founder of Elephant Learning Mathematics Academy. He is also the author of the book, Treating Mathematics Anxiety: Inclusive Strategies for Working with Students Exhibiting Mathematics Anxiety. Awesome talk. Great info. You're going to like this talk. Thanks so much for listening. Oh, by the way, before you go, it'd be so cool if you took a minute to help out the podcast. And I got a couple of ways you could do that. One would be, you know, simply tell a friend and share the links. Yeah. Or how about go to my website and leave a review and subscribe? There's a way. How about click on the link on my website homepage that says, buy me a coffee. You click there, and by doing this, you could donate a dollar or two to help me address the costs associated with producing the podcast. Thanks so much. You are awesome. Enjoy the show.
And what ends up happening is that whichever way the student is trending, that tends to be the way they end up going. Because if I'm saying I can't do it, and I want to prove to myself I can't do it, inauthentic attempts are very good at making that happen. And I can ignore all the evidence that I can do it.
It's the Education Podcast, your favorite show, with lots of groovy guests, and they share what they know. So crank it up to 10 and let your neighbors know that here's another show with Dr. Steve Mileto. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. With Dr. Steve Mileto.
Dr. Aditya Nagraf helps students overcome mathematics anxiety. Aditya is the creator and founder of Elephant Learning Mathematics Academy, which helps students learn years of mathematics over the course of a few months using their system just 10 minutes per day, 3 days per week. With a PhD in mathematics and computer sciences, Dr. Nagraf has spent over 30 years in industry as a software engineer, author, leader, speaker, and serial entrepreneur, working on everything from atomic clocks to iOS and Android apps to Amazon's Kindle Fire. As the founder of Elephant Head Software, which won the prestigious J.D. Edwards Innovation Award in 2015, he has also done software projects for Pearson, Verizon, Telefonica, J.D. Edwards Oracle, and other billion-dollar companies. Now with Elephant Learning, Dr. Nagraf has taught nearly 200,000 years of mathematics to over 165,000 students around the world, and is on a mission to change the way the world teaches mathematics. With a Facebook following of over 54K, Aditya has spoken at the University of Denver and is the author of numerous scientific works, a series of blogs on learning mathematics, as well as the Amazon bestseller, Rethinking Math Learning and Treating Mathematics Anxiety. For his expertise, Dr. Nagraf has been featured in media, news, and over 50 podcasts. Aditya, thanks so much for being on the show, and say hi to everyone.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Appreciate you being here. This is going to be fun because I got to tell you, you got to... awesome book, and it's talking, and it's really cool what you do with Elephant Learning. We're going to start there, but I do have to say that mathematics anxiety is so real, having been a parent and a kid who dealt with it himself, and so appreciate the topic of the book. So before we go into that, you know, our focus today is going to be your book, Treating Mathematics Anxiety, Inclusive Strategies for Working with Students Exhibiting Mathematics Anxiety. But before we do that, let's talk about your company, Elephant Learning. I mean, what's its purpose? Where'd the idea come from? And why the name Elephant Learning?
Okay, great. So we're on a mission to empower children with mathematics. We were founded by me and another PhD mathematician. Since then, I'm the only person that stayed. And basically, it started when we learned that 4 out of 5 students start kindergarten unprepared for the kindergarten curriculum. And what we learned was that boils down to a language gap. So like, for example, what kindergarten thinks is counting to 10 is slide over 10 things, or give me 10 things, and the student's able to slide over 10 things and stop on 10. Whereas most parents believe counting to 10 is just saying the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So in one case, they could just be saying the numbers. In the other case, they are demonstrating understanding in those numbers. What happens from there is that preschool math scores predict third grade reading scores better than preschool reading. Preschool math scores predict fifth grade overall scores. And we see that if you look at the data broken down by income, this all happens along income lines. And basically the data shows that when a student enters the education system able to understand the teacher, then the education system works. And if they do not, then it does not. And so me and the other professor of mathematics from the University of Denver decided to take the all the research that's been done in early age education and combine that with advanced algorithms that are able to adapt to the student at a faster pace, and focus solely on the essential topics so that we could take a student who, you know, might be learning to count and get them to something as far as multiplication and division. The research shows that children as young as four are exhibiting division during play, like if you do pretend playtime. And it's the adults in the room that don't feel like they should be labeling it because it's too advanced that are then inhibiting this language growth. And so, yeah, on average, children in our system learn about a year and a half of math over the course of 10 weeks when they use it about 30 minutes per week. We've taken students that are severely behind, like 12 years old, testing out at the third grade level, have them catch up within 3 to 6 months. We've had students as young as four doing things as advanced as fractions. And yeah, we cover from counting through algebra, and we accept students of all ages. So the target audience is almost everybody. We're going to add coding potentially. We have a potential grant with the National or with the Department of Education that we're waiting to see hear back about. And if we get it, yeah, we'll build coding and we'll build probability theory.
Very nice, very nice. So what about the name? Where did the idea to use an elephant as the...
Well, the software company was Elephant Head Software, so it was Elephant Learning. But Elephant Head Software was just kind of maybe a whim because I really wanted Yellow Duck. But my client at the time said, I can't go back to the VPs and say Yellow Duck is doing the software.
That's so, awesome to know. Great
so
story.
I said, how about Elephant Head? And he was like, yeah. I was like, let's do that then.
Very cool. That's an awesome story. I like that. That's well, I would have voted for Yellow Duck. So, but I like Elephant.
All of the software companies that I was working for that were contract at the time, it was all three syllables and something like the Cardinal Peak, Magpie Technologies.
Oh, that's funny.
Fine, whatever. I'm an elephant. You're a magpie. We're good.
I like that. That's good. It's good stuff. All right. So let's talk about this. What does working with Elephant Learning look like? I mean, how do you make this work? How do you make this happen? How does it work for the student or the parent, the teacher, however it's working?
It all is about meeting the student at their level of understanding. So like when you're talking about any type of vocabulary type learning jargon, if you will, right? The jargon tends to build on top of itself. So I'm going to give you an example outside of math. So like, a child really cannot understand what an ambassador or a diplomat is unless they understand what a government is, because it's a government employee kind of thing. And so in a similar manner, you can't really understand multiplication unless you understand addition. And so like what our system was designed to do was quickly identify the student's level of understanding and then feed them the activities that the early age education researchers had already found effective at teaching those topics. And then we back it up with a coaching program because, well, sometimes parents have anxiety around math, and then they can talk to one of our coaches and we can either help them with that or help them with the problem that their student might be facing. And then also when we added algebra, we sort of realized that maybe the parent, most parents may not be able to help based on the statistics. And so, yeah, that's basically what it is. The student just uses it 10 minutes a day, feels like a puzzle game. They got 100 characters to choose from. The characters wrap the activity, and they learn years of math in just 10 minutes. Like, so
nice,
like,
nice.
It feels like magic, and to some degree, it is, I guess. I don't know. It's doing the right activity really at the right time. That's the trick.
Gotcha. And this is cool because, you know, like, all right. So as somebody who, before we started recording, I was explaining to you that, you know, I got two sons who are engineers. I got a wife who's got 2 degrees in math and worked in the corporate world in mathematics. And then, you know, she married a history major, me. And just a note, when I was in college, I went through Calc 2, but there's a reason why I stopped at Calc 2, because you're talking about that building thing. One of the problems I had that my professor took time to show me was that I was trying to do things too fast, and I used my eraser too much, and it was algebra, not the calculus, that was causing me issues. So I think it's interesting that you mentioned that about things building upon each other, because you are talking to someone who, after a while, I was seriously into that math anxiety. And this is as a young 20, I was probably early 20s. And, you know, and it's to find out that if I'd only paid a little more attention to what I was doing, that was my problem there. But I mean, it can impact everybody. And so let's switch to your book, Treating Mathematics Anxiety, Inclusive Strategies for Working with Students Exhibiting Mathematics Anxiety. In chapter 1, you share that mathematics is a language, but you note that when it comes to learning mathematics, students ask, how to do it? How do you do this stuff? Could you explain what you mean?
Yeah, so like this is kind of the challenge, I'd say, like with mathematics education, maybe in general, because like, I mean, theoretically speaking, Common Core and these standards are moving in this direction where what we have to do is demonstrate understanding of the idea by applying it to solve a problem. But then after that, there's this idea of executing the calculations, which is kind of what we grew up in, right? That was the traditional mathematics courses when I was younger. And the challenge is this, is that the proliferation of computing devices has maybe made that skill a little bit less valuable, I'd say, than it used to be, because if you think back to the 60s and what it took to put a human being on the moon, all those calculations had to be executed by human beings. And so therefore, the government at the time sort of knew, if we educate you on how to execute the calculations, at least you got a job over here executing them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like in the movie Oppenheimer, when they say, well, it's not like I'm not good at math. That's not what they were saying, right? Because physicists, I mean, that's what they do, is they, like, if you watch on Netflix, there's this thing with Stephen Hawking and black holes, and they're like making equations. They're making equations, right? What they were talking about was, I don't know about executing these calculations. So first, this separation of what it is, I think, is very important in the mind of educators and the mind of the public. So like, yeah, when you take graduate mathematics, you find out what it actually is like the tool to solve any problems. So like Sudoku puzzles was a thing that one of my colleagues got a PhD in. And like, we talked about things like, how can you, like GPS systems, how do they operate, right? And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's just so many applications, but the thought of what is it is just, well, we're just going to focus on the calculations. And so therefore, we never really figure out, hey, where are we going to apply this, when the answer actually is everywhere? Because like, for example, the computer science department at the University of Denver, when I was going there, was housed within the mathematics department. And it was the same way in Europe when I went out there. It was the mathematicians, Turing, that invented the computers. So like, even the quantum computers, I was taking courses back then, like they were hypothesizing, how is this stuff going to work? It was all linear algebra, to be honest with you. These things, right? Like, I mean, this is the thing, is like, oh, well, I've talked to people where they say, my child doesn't need to know math. They need to know how to code. Well, coding is variables and functions, and that sounds like algebra. So if you didn't get through algebra, then how are you going to do it? And that, I think, is the base issue, right? Because if we feel like we can teach people to be scientists or engineers without understanding the underlying tools that they use to solve problems, then you get situations where bridges fall down.
That's powerful. Yeah, that's
yeah.
Very much.
Planes
so.
Blow, doors blow off airplanes. We forget to put 2 sensors on the front of airplanes. We got to use logic. We got to use philosophy.
You got that right. That's it's so real because that's. I think that you know it is. It, one of the things you just talked about mentioned the idea that it's. Well, we want to know coding. But we don't need to know math. It's like, no, that's part of it. And I like that. It's like, you know, it's because I've run into that with people where they say similar sorts of things. It's like, yeah, you do have to have some background information here, I would think, to help you understand so that you're not just doing like you were talking about, which is, you know, doing the problem solving or solving, you know, just solving as a function. That's good stuff. The title of your book is Treating Mathematics Anxiety. What causes math anxiety?
Well, okay, so what I talk about in the book specifically for this is one of the systems that like the brain appears to be running. So like we talk about what does an abstract learning system look like? And then we boil it down to the belief system for math anxiety. So it looks like this. You have a set of inputs. You have a set of outputs, and then you have a function. And what you have then is a training function that alters the function so that the inputs map to the outputs. And the idea is that the continuity on F, given similar input, should give you similar output. So as an example, you have an app that you point at the camera at whatever's in the room, and it starts to say, this is an oven, this is a microwave, this is a desk, this is a chair. And that the inputs would be, you know, whatever the video feed is, the outputs would be the name of the object, and you train the little function until it starts to produce. For the human being, one, we don't have all the information at birth like the AI does. But two, we are adding the meaning ourselves. And for math anxiety, it boils down to, I can do this, or I can't do this. And what ends up happening is that whichever way the student is trending, that tends to be the way they end up going. Because if I'm saying I can't do it and I want to prove to myself I can't do it, inauthentic attempts are very good at making that happen. And I can ignore all the evidence that I can do it. And then conversely, if I believe I can do it, maybe I just use the evidence that I can do it and I ignore the evidence that I can't do it. And I get really good at it because I keep doing it, right? And I believe I can do it, I keep doing it. And like the more time you put into it, clearly you're gonna get better at it. And that's what it is. And this is for any endeavor. This is not just for mathematics. This is, I'm good at basketball. I can work out with weights. I can, right? I've changed my entire life. I used to be 250 pounds. Because I just said, I can't work out. I can't breathe hard. I have asthma. Now I go to the gym and I come back out and I'm breathing hard. And it's like, yeah, whatever. I used to come out, oh, I'm going to die. Not anymore. Gym anxiety cured.
Excellent. A new book coming out.
yeah, that's the general idea. So the general advice then is to keep the student on the I can path. Keep showing them. Force the evidence in front of them so that they see it.
That's awesome. At the end of every chapter, you have a segment called exercises. I got to make sure to point this out because I love this. Why'd you include these?
Well, so the idea was that if you go through these exercises, then you now are looking at your own math anxiety on a piece of paper. And once it's out of your head and onto a piece of paper, well, you can deal with it in numerous different ways. But at the same time, one of the tactics that you could use to help students exhibiting math anxiety is called Gestalt in certain circles. And it's the idea of maybe I'm going to share an experience from my past of overcoming math anxiety or having math anxiety in order to empathize or et cetera. And so like now you also now have a repertoire to be able to Gestalt with.
Very cool. It's a nice thing. You have these good questions that kind of help you do a little reflecting and thinking about it. Can you talk about the creation of those questions? I mean, they just kind of, I mean, how'd you go about making sure that you covered what you wanted to there?
Well, it's an alteration of a process that I got from Mike Valentine at On Purpose Now. He's an ex-Landmark leader. Some of it was designed to elicit what is your belief structure. Some of it was designed to elicit what are the emotions around that belief structure. And some of it was designed to help you grieve the story, because if you can grieve the story and accept the gifts that you're getting from it, you can start to give up the belief that happens to not be true or be limiting, or however you want to describe it.
Very cool. So, all right, so let's talk about this. I mean, what part does elephant learning then play in helping students overcome this anxiety?
So there's two things that you need to do to help a student overcome math anxiety. One, you have to believe they can do it. You have to tell them that you believe they can do it. But the second is you have to meet them at their level of understanding. And so then these two things kind of work hand in hand. Really, the book came from the coaching program that we devised for elephant learning. It happens to be valuable without elephant learning, but put together, I mean, it's a very powerful system, because you're meeting them at their level of understanding, and then you're telling them they can do it, they can do it. And they can see the progression happen right there within the system. So, like, for example, one of the things that we did very specifically for this purpose is the elephant age. So the way we designed the elephant age, we needed a one number metric to kind of measure progress, because like the standards were so complicated. So what we did was we put the average age of a student taking that standard within the classroom, and we averaged the highest five numbers, which means then as you continue to progress, the number can only go up. So when you log in, you see a graph, whether you're a child or an adult, going from bottom left to top right, and it's green, just like the stock market. And that's designed to encourage them. If we get a student on the phone who has learned a year of mathematics or around that amount in a short amount of time, we tell them, like, look at the progress you've made. This is not average progress. This is not something that happens out there in the world necessarily according to the statistics, right? So you are now a statistical anomaly. And they feed off that. They go back to class, they understand the teacher, they participate in the classroom, and that's a student who is now empowered by mathematics, because they're going to use it to solve problems in their life.
I like that. Like it. You know, in chapter 5, it's titled Overarching Strategies for Working with Mathematics Anxiety. You have a segment that is titled Fostering I Can. Why is getting to I Can important? And you've mentioned a little bit about that already, but if you could kind of go into a little more detail there, that'd be great.
Right. So, like, again, with the AI, again, we're the ones controlling the inputs and the outputs. With the student, they're looking to adults. They're looking to the teacher. They're looking to their peers. They're trying to garner meaning from the world, right? It's part of why it's so scary to be a kid. Like, what does this mean, right? It's a natural place yes. to have anxiety. And so, like, what we need to do then is we need to show them, look, you're doing it. You can do it. You need to believe you can do it, right? And so that's what I mean by fostering I can. But the reason why it's important is because when you go back to that AI model, you want to give it enough data points of I can so that it starts just assigning that meaning.
Excellent. Love it. All right. Something that you get into also in the book is called the drama triangle. Can you give us a little bit of introduction to it?
Yeah. So this is like well known in communication circles and probably literature and et cetera. But it's this idea of like hero, victim, villain, commonly termed. They can change the names, anti-hero. I don't know. Right. Like, idea is basically the same, which is that you got three human beings, and mathematically speaking, they're either on the same page or they're not. And if they're not, then there's some sort of triangle being formed. And so then the question is like, can we get all three people onto the same team? And this becomes kind of important because when you look out there and you look at society, say, right, you start to see that actually this drama triangle in the villain position can be ideas. So I got defriended by a communist from high school because like he was like, you say that the communist countries have a petty dictator, but like there's a million petty dictators in America. And it's like, yeah, but you get to choose your petty dictator. And he just didn't like the logic coming into this conversation. So it's like, because like it is, I'm going to work for a petty dictator, but I get to choose which one versus being assigned one. So he said something about capitalism at the time that just made me realize that, like, oh crap, right? He's a victim to an idea.
Nice.
And there's no way to get freedom from this. Right? Like, right. And there's no hero that can fix this either, because guess what? I don't think capitalism's going anywhere in America. Like, it appears to be working. I mean, we got microchips and we got, like, I mean, these things didn't exist before.
Right. Right.
So, like, but that idea happens with mathematics. And I witnessed that happen then with mathematics. And some of those stories are also in the book. And the problem is that if you put something like that over there, then permanently the student's a victim. And if the parent or the adult or the teacher sides with them on, yeah, that thing over there is wrong or bad, or, you know, however they want to, we don't need it. We don't just, then yeah, like you got strength in numbers. Like you got validation that you don't need to do this. So then why are you going to?
Right. That's all we need is that validation to say why I can't do it. So I gotcha. Right. Gotcha. It's interesting thinking about it in those terms, because it does happen, because some people don't want to tell you, yeah, just sit there and start working on that thing. And I'll see what I can do to help you. By the way, as a history major, whenever I say that to my sons, they look at me and go, Dad, go get Mom. Right. But it just reinforces the idea that, I don't mean about a history major, it reinforces the idea that you can't do it if someone sits there and goes, oh, you know what, you're right, go on and go play. Or, you know, you can't do this because, you know, someone has made your life miserable, therefore, you know, you can't.
My favorite's like when they say there's a bug in this system. So it's Elephant Learning's fault, right? Nice. You don't need that. You know what, let's cancel.
Nice. Jeez. Yeah, I can imagine.
I don't like the voices. What? I just told you your kid's going to learn a year and a half of math in 10 weeks and you don't like the voice. That's the reason. By the way, there's a place where you can change the voices.
Excellent.
Yes, right? Like, let me show you where that is.
Nice. That's usually because someone's coming up with a reason why they just need to, they're making more villains, I guess, is
how that's it what down. It is, right? Like, oh, well, yeah, no, and it should be fun too. I'm not trying to hide that it's math.
Nice.
I called it a gamification on purpose. It's math gamified.
Nice. It is funny because when you work with people, one of the things you run into is when they're trying to not do something, so there's more reasons not to. And it's like, well, let me show you why you should do, because this is, and I think that's a big part of what you're doing. So good stuff there.
Thank you.
You know, I got to make sure I say this, and make sure I say it right too. In chapter 7, it's titled More Coaching Strategies for Working with Mathematics Anxiety. You explain disambiguations, right? If nothing else, it's an awesome word. All right.
Yeah.
So what are you focused on here?
Well, so like when I did the Landmark program, one of the first things that they did was they explained integrity to people. And the way they described it was they said, look, there's this moral component, which is, you know, very fuzzy. But like this other definition here, it's very, very engineering, right? It's very precise, right? You're giving a precise meaning to the word integrity. And the precise word means the precision definition they gave us was whole and complete. And the example they gave us was a wheel, right? So there's a wheel of some sort. And like, if there's a break of integrity, well, guess what? It doesn't work right. Right. So integrity leads to workability. And so this is a, it's a philosophical discussion with a lot of precision, which takes away all of the emotions around the word integrity, which, I mean, most people have some sort of emotions around, again, probably due to the moral component. And so one of the things that you could do is you could disambiguate incorrect and wrong. And so, like, wrong has that moral component. Like, you're wrong. And it's like, oh, my God, like, am I going to go to hell now because I answered the math question incorrect? That's not going to happen, okay? Answering incorrect definitely means false. Like, wrong has the definition false, but, like, incorrect doesn't have the moral piece. And, like, it's incorrect. So now if you're going to assign the meaning, you're assigning the meaning. I didn't do it. I just told you it's incorrect, right? But then disambiguating it for that student has the same effect for them to realize that, like, oh, the thing I wrote is just false. It's not true. And so now, like, what's, like, why should I have emotion around this, right? It's just, there's this analogy we do with basketball, and it's just like, in basketball, if you miss the shot, well, okay, shoot again, right? But in mathematics or anywhere in education, if you miss the shot, it's a learning opportunity. Nice. You get to now understand something that you didn't understand before. And if we can get the student from answering wrong is bad to this is a learning opportunity, well, we've switched the education scenario for that student.
I like that. That's good stuff. And it's, one of the things that I just think so much, it just points a lot to different things that we do when we're struggling with something or we're not wanting to, I don't know, for some reason I keep wanting to say finish or go the direction we want to go, but I appreciate you explaining that. Now my favorite chapter is chapter 8. And by the way, I used to ask authors, tell me your favorite chapter, and almost invariably, they'd all say, that's like picking my favorite kid. And I go, okay, fine. So instead, I choose them now. but my favorite chapter is chapter 8. It's called Coaching Strategies When Working with Parents. So what's the key to assisting parents in being good coaches?
Well, a lot of it is like just giving them like some of the tools, like the disambiguation, like the, the questions, the exercises from the book where it's like, okay, if I can have stories from my own past so that I could just relay them so that like the student is not like picking up my anxiety. The basketball analogy, I like the basketball analogy a lot just because I use it a lot. Like I just think about like, okay, well, what would I do if this was basketball? And then I kind of give the same response. Right? Like if he's completely blowing up, you know what? Maybe we should just take 10 minutes. I mean, I just, the ball didn't go into hoop. It's not a big deal, right? Let's get some water. Let's use the toilet. Let's come back, right? Let's see what happens. Things like this, right? So like, and a lot of it refers back to like, here, you can use this tool, third party, and you could use that tool also third party.
I like that. It's so important, I think, that to have these talks with parents, having been one who there were a couple times that even though it all worked out eventually, and like I said, they're on their own in their world and they're engineers. But there were some periods of time in the sixth and seventh grade that I'm pretty sure that there was a bunch of consternation and having to sit at the table in the kitchen and some words like this were uttered. Yes, you will sit there and get it done. And we are here to help you. I don't know if I want to do this. I don't understand. I think that being able to help parents in addressing these types of things is important because, sometimes that's just it's just not what you want to hear, right? It's like, come on.
As an educator, you definitely don't want to be fighting the parent. They got a lot more time with the parent than they got with you. And so therefore that's more input to the system.
Right. And that's where you hope they're not making those excuses, right? Helping out with the villain stuff and the trauma triangle. I like that. All right. So, Aditya, if someone wanted to follow up and connect with you and or learn more, where would you send them?
Well, so like Elephant Learning's page on Facebook tends to have a lot of followers, so we post there. I now have my own personal public Facebook page. I don't know like what kind of status they're giving it, but there's not a lot of people on there. So if you find me there, but like LinkedIn also tends to have a lot of people following me, and I post there. So any of those three locations would be great. And yeah, if you want to learn more about elephant learning or treating math anxiety, if you just go to elephantlearning.com, the book's linked from there, and we have some professional development programs and all sorts of stuff.
Very cool. And I'll make sure that information is in my show notes so it's easy for them to find you and hook up with you. And one of the things I got to ask you is something that I like to ask my guests before we finish up. And it's this. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If so, who was it? What would you say if given a chance to say thank you?
Well, yeah. So my thesis advisor, Dr. Richard Ball, I mean, I owe him like so much because, I mean, the ability to hone philosophical truth, I think has made a huge impact on my life, even to become like healthy. And it comes, I mean, from his efforts and the other efforts of the professors over at DU, teaching me the methodologies of proof and training me up on advanced mathematics and et cetera. And I'm so grateful that I actually donated $50,000 to the University of Denver under his name for the Rick Ball lecture series to help create more research mathematicians. So it's designed to help students who want to become research mathematicians, and it helps them get over the hump of actually doing the research.
Well, that's awesome. Kudos to you for making that donation too. That's awesome. That's very cool. Tells you a lot about what he's done for you. So good stuff. Thank you so much for sharing your book, Treating Mathematics Anxiety, Inclusive Strategies for Working with Students Exhibiting Mathematics Anxiety. What a powerful book. A great learning tool for parents and their children and teachers. Love it. Wishing you the best in all you do.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Hey, you have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast to help you help kids achieve their dreams. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the podcast network based in Canada called Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Hey, thanks for listening. It would be awesome if you visited my website at stephenmileto.com and connected with me, left a review, and listened to more episodes. And by the way, you could also share it with your friends, with your family, and your colleagues. Thanks so much. You're awesome.